23. Friday, March the 31st. Tomorrow things would get serious. I still could not quite believe it. I scanned the papers, looking for signs of any mitigation, perhaps some movement toward a more reasonable, acceptable position. There was nothing. Just the intensification of some measure or other, and pedantic instructions about the details of the action and the manner in which it was to be executed. Otherwise it was business as usual. Looking at the steady bustle and traffic on the streets, one had no sense that anything special was about to take place. Jewish shops were still open and trading as usual. Today one was still permitted to shop there. It would not be prohibited until tomorrow, at 8 a.m. precisely. I went to the Kammergericht. I stood there, cool and grey as always, set back from the street in a distinguished setting of lawns and trees. Its halls were filled with the hushed fluttering of attorneys in their bat-like black silk gowns, carrying briefcases under their arms, with concentrated, serious expressions on their faces. Jewish attorneys were pleading in court as though this were a day like any other. Not being due in court, I went to the library, as though this were a day like any other, settled down at one of the long work-tables, and started reading a document about which I had to give an opinion. Some complicated affair with intricate points of law. I carried the heavy legal tomes to my place and surrounded myself with them. I looked up decisions of the high courts of the Reich and made notes. As always, the high-ceilinged, spacious room was filled with the inaudible electricity of many minds hard at work. In making pencil marks on paper, I was setting the instruments of the law to work on the details of my case, summarizing, comparing, weighing the importance of this or that word in a contract, investigating what bearing this or that clause would have on the matter, according to the precedents. When I scribbled a few words, something happened, like the first cut in a surgical operation. A question was clarified, a component of a judicial decision put in place. Not the final decision, naturally. It is thus irrelevant whether the plaintiff... So it remains to investigate whether... Careful, precise, silent work. Everybody in the room was similarly immersed in their own cases. Even the ushers, somewhere between beadles and policemen, moved more quietly here in the library and seemed to try and make themselves invisible. The room was full of extreme silence, a silence filled with a high tension of deeply concentrated work. It was like a silent concert. I loved this atmosphere. At home I would have been unable to work today. Here it was perfectly easy. Your thoughts just could not stray. It was like being in a fortress, or better, a test tube. No breath came in from the outside world. Here there was no revolution. What was the first noticeable noise? A door banging? A distant sound like an order being given? Suddenly everybody raised their heads and strained to hear what it was. The room was still utterly quiet. But the quality of the silence had changed. It was no longer the silence of concentrated work. It was filled with alarm and agitation. There was a clatter of footsteps outside in the corridor, the sound of rough boots on the stairs, then a distant, indistinct din, shouts, doors banging. A few people got up and went to the door, looked out, and came back. One or two approached the ushers and spoke quietly with them. In here no one ever raised their voice. The noise from outside grew stronger. Somebody spoke into the silence. S.A. Then, not particularly loudly, somebody else said, "They're throwing out the Jews." And a few others laughed. At that moment, this laughter alarmed me more than what was actually happening. With a start, I realized that there were Nazis working in this room. How strange. Gradually, the disturbance took shape. At first it had been intangible. Readers got up, tried to say something to one another, paced about slowly to no great purpose. One man, obviously a Jew, closed his books, packed his documents, and left. Shortly afterward somebody, perhaps a superintendent, appeared in the doorway and announced clearly but calmly, "The S.A. is in the building. The Jewish gentleman would do well to leave." Almost at once we heard shouts from outside. "Out with the Jews!" A voice answered, "They've already gone," and again I heard two or three merry giggles, just as before. I could see them now. They were referendars, just like me. The premature end to the carnival ball 4 weeks ago came unpleasantly to mind. Things were breaking down now, as then. Several readers packed their cases and left. I was reminded of the phrase, "You have permission to leave." Did they still have permission? Today it was no longer so certain. Others left their things on the tables and went out of the library to see what was going on. More than ever, the ushers tried to be invisible. Of those of us who stayed behind, one or two lit cigarettes. In the library of the Kammergericht, the ushers took no action. That itself was something of a revolution. The scouts later explained what had happened in the main part of the building. No atrocities. Why, certainly not. Everything went extremely smoothly. The courts had, for the most part, adjourned. The judges had removed their robes and left the building quietly and civilly, going down the staircase lined with SA men. The only place where there had been trouble was the attorney's room. A Jewish attorney had caused a fuss and been beaten up. Later I heard who it was. He had been wounded 5 times in the last war, had lost an eye, and even been promoted to captain. It had probably been his misfortune that he still remembered the tone to use with mutineers. In the meantime, the intruders had arrived at the library. The door was thrust open, and a flood of brown uniforms surged in. In a booming voice, one of them, clearly the leader, shouted, "Non-Aryans must leave the premises immediately." It struck me that he used the careful expression "non-Aryans," but also a rather colloquial expression for "premises." Someone, probably the same person as before, answered, "They've already left." Our ushers stood there as though they were about to salute. My heart beat heavily. What should I do? How keep my poise? Just ignore them. Do not let them disturb me. I put my head down over my work. I read a few sentences mechanically. "The defendant's claim that is untrue but irrelevant. Just take no notice." Meanwhile, a brown shirt approached me and took up position in front of my work table. "Are you Aryan?" Before I had a chance to think, I said, "Yes." He took a close look at my nose and retired. The blood shot to my face. A moment too late, I felt the shame. The defeat. I had said, "Yes." Well, in God's name, I was indeed an Aryan. I had not lied. I had allowed something much worse to happen. What a humiliation, to have answered the unjustified question as to whether I was Aryan so easily, even if the fact was of no importance to me. What a disgrace to buy, with a reply, the right to stay with my documents in peace. I had been caught unawares, even now. I had failed my very first test. I could have slapped myself. As I left the Kammergericht, it stood there, grey, cool and calm as ever, set back from the street in its distinguished setting. There was nothing to show that, as an institution, it had just collapsed. There was nothing about my appearance to show that I had just suffered a terrible reverse, a defeat that would be almost impossible to make good. A well-dressed young man walked down Potsdamer Strasse. There was nothing untoward about the scene. Business as usual. But in the air, the approaching thunder of events to come.